from Johannesburg to Jerusalem. The world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the program on this fabulous winter morning that you wouldn't even know is winter because it's so nice out there. We have a great show lined up for you today, and I'm looking forward to bringing it to you. So do stay tuned for your next 50 minutes of current affairs and culture, and we're definitely going to be doing a bit of both today. Later on in the show, we're going to be covering the Venezuelan elections and what is going on in that country. We have an activist from Venezuela who's actually from the country and is in South Africa, and he's going to be talking to us about what has been going on and where the country is headed. So that is going to be sort of just after the half past the hour mark. But before that, I am excited to say that we have two really interesting people who are going to be part of the show for today, because South Africa has gotten a new UNESCO World Heritage Site. Now, if you're not sure about UNESCO World Heritage Sites, they are sites that are of particular cultural or sometimes also biological value that are really important in terms of the whole of humankind. And then South Africa has a number of them. The Cape Floral Kingdom, for example, St. Lucia is another one, Robben Island. So we've got a few, but we've just had a few be added to the list. And in this case, it's actually a set of caves that runs along the coast of South Africa from the KZN all the way into the Cape. And you might be wondering why it is that a set of caves would be considered for a World Heritage Site. Why is it? So to bring on some people who can explain it to us, we have two great guests today. The one is Prof. Lynn Wadley. She is an archaeologist, and I'm happy to say actually was in my department at Wits University, although I was on the geography side and she was on the archaeology side. And we also have Dr. Troy Mayers, who is a Khoi and San researcher, to talk about these caves, in particular the one in KZN, which is the Sibhudu Cave. I hope I was pronouncing that right. Troy and Lynn, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us on Chai FM.
Thank you very much, Vince.
Thank you so much, and good morning to the listeners.
Thank you.
Good morning, listeners.
Thank you so much to both of you. So let's just start with these caves, Lynn. Maybe you can explain to us what is this sequence of caves that we have, and why are they important in particular from, I guess, an archaeological perspective, because that's partly why they were chosen.
Yes, of course, I'm most interested in Sibhudu Cave, which is near Tongaat, because that's where I excavated for many years. But two other sites in the Western Cape are also involved. One of them is Deep Kloof, near Elands Bay, and the other is Pinnacle Point, near Mossel Bay. So these are three caves with very long occupations. Pinnacle Point was first occupied about 162,000 years ago, and both Deep Kloof and Sibhudu from about 100,000 years ago. So these are very early sites, and what they really are important for is that they were all occupied by Homo sapiens, that is, by people like ourselves. Now, this is important because in Africa, Homo sapiens evolved about 300,000 years ago. So everybody who is on Earth today, all Homo sapiens, evolved in Africa.
Now, of course, Lynn, you know, we have one of the World Heritage Sites, which I didn't mention before, was the Cradle of Humankind, which is just up the road in Johannesburg here. And the importance of those sites was that they they contain kind of pre-humans, people who were, or not people, parts of the evolutionary scale where they have helped to us to understand the evolutionary record and what's led to Homo sapiens. What's interesting about these caves, in my reading of it, is that they almost spark an important debate about, well, what does it mean to actually be a Homo sapien? What does it actually mean to be a human? And people, it's kind of a philosophical question, but at an archaeological level, these caves provide some kinds of activities that these people were involved in, which help give us a clue about how they were evolving in different ways that quote unquote would make them human.
Yes, before talking about the new site, I should just mention that the cradle of humankind is really important for Africa too, because it shows that every hominin that developed on this earth came out of Africa. But that happened about 4 million years ago, before there were the sort of important cultural things that we see taking place with Homo sapiens. So the new heritage site that combines these Homo sapien sites is important from about 300,000 years ago, as I said before, when Homo sapiens first developed in Africa. So for the second time, Africa becomes incredibly important as the cradle of humankind, this time for modern humans. And you need to know, of course, what it is that makes a modern human. It's not only about the anatomy that we have today. And, you know, as a sideline there, I could mention that probably 300,000 years ago, when Homo sapiens first appeared on this earth, they probably would have looked very much like us. And if you dressed them up rather like we do today and put them out in the street, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But what is so important, of course, about Homo sapiens is the cultural development and the cognitive development that we associate with modern humans. And I prefer to call it, rather than modern behavior, complex behavior, because we could really ask the question, are we really modern yet? And, you know, what is modernity? But what we can say is that their behavior was extremely complex. And by that, I mean that they had symbolic behavior. They had the ability to plan ahead. They could delay the gratification of something. So by planning ahead and waiting when an animal snare was laid, for example, they could delay getting that gratification for a bit later. That's a very modern thing. They were also capable of abstract thought and analogical reasoning. So all of those are very important modern things. And how do we recognize those in archaeological sites? Well, one of the things, of course, for symbolic behavior, it's the presence of ornamentation and art and things like that, because all of those are symbolic. So we recognize those early on in these Homo sapiens sites that have been recognized as World Heritage Sites. But there are other things as well. So the early Homo sapiens made composite tools, composite weapons, things like bows and arrows. And the minute that composite weapons are manufactured, you need an artifact like glue or adhesive to attach the arrowhead to its shaft. And if you think about it, making something like that is incredibly complex, because you're doing it from natural things in the environment. You can't go to the store to buy objects like that. So resins from plants would need to be collected, together with a number of other things that would provide for the kind of additives that need to be put in the recipes for those adhesives. And then when people were using bows and arrows, the arrows were extremely fragile and delicate and probably needed poison to make them effective. So all of this suggests that these early human ancestors had good chemical knowledge of the natural products around them. So these are some of the ideas that we associate with modern behavior or complex behavior in the deep, deep past.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. We're talking today to Prof. Lynn Wadley and Dr. Troy Mayers about this new UNESCO World Heritage Site. We're going to be carrying on the conversation. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
We're talking UNESCO World Heritage sites today on the program, including a set of new caves that have been declared World Heritage Sites. We're talking to Prof. Lynn Wadley and Dr. Troy Mayers about this. And let me bring you in there, Troy, because, you know, when we start to talk about arrows and cultural stuff and the poisons, we start to think about you know, some of the most recognizable of South Africans as in terms of early South Africans, and that is the koi and the san. And I imagine that for researchers like yourself who are working on koi and san issues, recognition like this must be really important.
Thank you, Benji, and thank you to the viewers. Yes, Benji, particularly the challenges that we face within the political South African political landscape as to who arrived here first and who owns the land. You know, it's always been a nudge and push in terms of the Khoisan, you know, gaining some sort of a leverage in staking their claim to the country. Not saying that it's totally theirs, but finding a place in the sun, so to say. So for myself, we've actually been struggling because we never came across people like Professor Lynn Wadley and Dr. Jeff Blundell prior. And we were left to the vagaries of the law and international law when it came to First Nation people. And we had to kind of paddle our own canoe. So a lot of voices, a lot of differences until I came across a record. And of course, you know, when it's personal, then you give it your all and you give it effort. So I found out that my great-great-grandfather was actually accepted into a Bushman tribe in the Drakensberg, and I think one of the last on-record Bushman tribes, and he actually lived in caves, you know. And I think Layla Mellon, who was one of the PhD students, looked at the fine line drawings or inscriptions or rock art of Bushmen, and she noticed a variance in technique, and she ascribed that to newcomers to the art and kind of credited him as one of those artists. You know, so for me now, what it meant was prehistory met now written history, and we are actually part of that, and it gave me a great sense of pride and joy to help the people, our people, reclaim their past and restore their pride and in who they are. And of course, being a First Nation grouping, I mean, I had spoken to Prof. Wadley on Saturday, and I kind of tried to harness this cave history as our very own. And she disabused me of that notion and said, no, all human beings in the world actually emanate from these people. So, I mean, that's even more greater than just being a Khoisan, is that this should be a heritage owned by every human being, you know?
That's such an interesting point that you're making there, Troy, about the importance of the UNESCO heritage sites and the fact that they are, like, belonging to all human history. So that, for me, is a question is, are these places accessible for obviously researchers? I mean, Lynn, you've been there most of your career. You spent a lot of time in these caves. I know that there's local communities that are around them. Are we likely to be able to find that for the global humanity, that these places are now accessible for people to to understand and see and be able to share in that global humanitarian culture.
Yes, the Declaration of World Heritage Sites goes along with that. We expect that they should be able to provide education and culture and visitations by people from all over the world, because we do need to share this. It's not just a South African triumph. It's not just our history. It's everybody's history. And that's a really important point to make. So we're hoping that these sites are going to be available for tourists, for educational groups. And I would particularly like to see groups of scholars, young people going there to learn about their heritage, and perhaps even, visits from young people internationally to see this incredible heritage. So what it means is that there should be interpretive centres that are set up at these heritage sites that may then also provide economic opportunities for local communities. So hopefully there's going to be benefit for a great many people out of this.
That's an important point that you're making, Ellen, about how this does contribute right now in a variety of ways to South Africa and to the people around, so that young people in particular can understand these issues and just general South Africans. I mean, Troy, you've worked quite a lot in different places, not just these caves, but in the Drakensberg and other parts of Gauteng. On this, how do you see this kind of work being used to benefit local communities?
Well, it would be opportune for me to mention, Benji and Prof and the listeners, that there's been a massive fire that broke out last week, I'm led to believe, by Dr. Jeff Blundell, in the great Giant's Castle area of Drakensberg. And I think it's got something like 80,000 tourists, mostly, I would assume, international tourists that actually visit that site. But because of mismanagement and, of course, not taking good advice and not having proper qualified people managing those sites, when I say proper qualified people with the necessary skill set and interest, like archaeologists and, of course, KwaZan tourist guides and, people that actually would like to take ownership, that this fire actually almost destroyed the site. A lot of the rock art was damaged, and UNESCO has asked for a report to be generated and forwarded. So on Wednesday, Dr. Jeff Blundell will visit the site, do an assessment, and attend to that. So from my side, one of the guys in Gauteng from the KwaZan community asked me, why is there such a dearth of knowledge when it comes to the province of Transvaal? And it seemed like the KwaZan didn't really live there. It's always in the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and it comes up to a certain latitude and then it dissipates. On speaking to Prof, she actually said to me that she's located 128, I don't know if it's pre-Stone Age or Stone Age sites, which proves the habitation by like hunter-gatherers in that area. So we're hoping to have this collaborative, initiatives going forward with professionals like Prof and international, because I know that in Israel itself, biblical archaeology has taken off like you cannot believe because of the contestation over land and beliefs. And, and it's used kind of like a proof in terms of us being here, and of course it's got its political challenges and connotations. But for us, it's, of course, tourism is very important as a revenue generator to sustain us in a modern economy. This has to be converted to that. But of course, giving quite a lot of credence to our forebears, and like in Australia, we'd like to see a situation where the KwaZan are actually afforded and accorded the respect that they're supposed to, have, which we know, we know where the history of the country comes from, but not belaboring that, where we can change this into a positive for everybody.
Thanks, Drew. I mean, I think that's a really interesting point. And what you're saying about Gauteng, I think, is fascinating. Lynn, I mean, I don't know how much experience you have about Gauteng archaeology, but can you expand on that for the listeners about what there is actually in Gauteng? And if people are interested in the kind of stuff that you're talking about, where are the places that they can go right now if they don't want to go all the way to Tongaat or to Pringle Bay to see this kind of stuff? How can people actually learn a bit more about this kind of thing in Johannesburg in particular?
You know, the reason that people thought that Gauteng was an empty space archaeologically is because most of the archaeologists who were employed have been employed in the Cape and have concentrated on the coastal areas for their excavations. But in fact, there's a great deal of archaeology in Gauteng. The Magaliesberg is extremely rich, and I did some excavations there years ago. Other people have as well. The rock art is also extremely rich in the Waterberg, in the Soutpansberg, the Machabeng, and so on. There's a great deal of rock art. It's really a question of not having done a great deal of archaeological work here. There are, of course, Iron Age sites where the early farmers lived have been excavated here from Revel Mason's days and even earlier. So it might just be a question of people not knowing a great deal about these sites. If visitors are wanting to go to sites in Gauteng, well, of course, the Cradle of Humankind is the one that comes to mind first. But there are also sites in the Magaliesberg and a great many rock art sites, as I mentioned, in many of the mountain regions further north, particularly in Limpopo province.
Well, there you go. Absolutely a fascinating a discussion there. And definitely you should go have a look. Also, the Origin Center in Wits, if you don't want to go too far, you can see all sorts of things that are great and really interesting. And I would encourage everyone to go have a look and go read up. There was a good article in the Daily Maverick about this discovery, which explains it. There's lots of news out there, so you can go check out about the new UNESCO heritage sites. Professor Lynn Waddell and Dr. Troy Mayers, thank you so much for joining us on the show and bringing us information on this new discovery.
Thank you, Benj. Thank you, Prof. Thank you, viewers.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a great day. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.